Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. 25 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a First Amendment ruling which sharply curtailed the rights of Hazelwood East student journalists who had written stories on student pregnancies and on divorce. This followed by almost 20 years an earlier high court ruling involving a Des Moines school student who had worn an anti-Vietnam War armband to school. She was expelled and took her case to court. Her name is Mary Beth Tinker. The Supreme Court ruling in the so-called Tinker case upheld her right to free expression, saying famously, First Amendment rights do not end at the schoolhouse gate. By the way, she later moved to University City, where she graduated from UCity High. Interestingly, the later Hazelwood case anniversary comes as students in various parts of the country today are facing First Amendment challenges. We have with us in studio to talk about the two earlier cases, Mary Beth Tinker, whose protest triggered the first case, and Don Corrigan. He's editor and co-publisher of the Webster, Kirkwood, and South County Times and the West End Word newspapers. He also teaches journalism at Webster University. Thank you all so much for being with us. Mary Beth, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here in St. Louis.
Congratulations, some 40 years later, your Supreme Court victory. But it's a victory that still resonates, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It's cited all the time when First Amendment issues come up with students, and they do so often. Here in Missouri, in fact, recently some students were protesting that one of the students got in trouble for, you know, complaining about his school and saying it's a crappy school or something like that. So the other students, you know, wore little tape over their mouths to protest about that. And there are so many times when students are speaking up about the things that matter to them.
I want to talk more specifically about your case, but I'll bring Don into the conversation. Don, why is it that students are so often targeted, do you think?
I think administrators are afraid. I think they're in tough positions, too, so I have some sympathy for administrators. But, you know, they worry about the next tax levy, you know, that's coming along. I know in my coverage with the Kirkwood newspaper, I remember when the school newspaper ran a Planned Parenthood ad, and there was such a fuss about that. And, you know, parents said, look, you got Hazelwood. There's no excuse for this. You guys have the power to stop these students from running this ad. And they had an advisor and a principal who sympathized with, really, the Tinker case and free expression, and they ran it. And some people say they lost a tax levy right after that because of the backlash from parents. So that's one of the reasons. And another reason is that administrators agree with the Supreme Court justices who said, well, you know, there's certain topics that are too mature. And students shouldn't be writing about these things. They should write about the football game and homecoming. They don't need to be writing about foreign policy in the United States or whether the food doesn't taste as good as it should in the school cafeteria.
Mary Beth, shouldn't school administrators have some authority like that to be able to control what kids are saying and doing?
Of course, and administrators do have quite a lot of leeway, even under the ruling in the Tinker case, because there were two important exceptions made to student expression, and that was, number one, that students can't substantially disrupt the school. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a walkout, like kids did recently in Lansing, Michigan, to protest the budget cuts of their school and the teachers, they would be disciplined for that. And the other exception is that students can't intrude on the rights of others. So when I talk to students about the First Amendment and our constitutional rights, of course, we all have limitations on our rights. We can't gather in the middle of Grand Avenue tonight and decide we want to assemble during rush hour. We have to also think about the rights of others. But I think that the issue is that students should have some voice in the decisions in their schools and along with administrators, teachers, parents, the community, because for one thing, it's been shown that when students do have a voice in their schools, the outcomes are better. There's less fighting. There's more success. And I'm a nurse. I'm a pediatric nurse, and I work with teenagers. And so I want kids to succeed in school. It's one of the best things for their health. And as it turns out, when they have a say in their schools and in their lives, they do better.
Why have you stuck with it for these 40-plus years? I mean, clearly, that was a long time ago. Pardon me for saying that. And I understand your passion. But why have you not let go of that?
Well, because, for one thing, I just think kids are great. And I love their energy, their creativity, their humor. And so I've really enjoyed being a nurse. And I have this little letter that I brought from David on Long Island. And he's got a little drawing of a peace sign and a little boy on there. And it says, "Thank you, Mary Beth, for standing up at the Supreme Court. You really did show a lot of kids that they have rights and that these rights mean something." And he signed it, "Your friend David." So, I mean, I just love that. And if I can get out there and tell kids about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and show them that you can bring it alive. You don't have to be Rosa Parks. You don't have to be Martin Luther King. You can be you and just speak up and get involved in the things going on in your school, in your community, and have a voice. And the kids really respond, so I enjoy it.
Don, are you in any sense surprised at this response from young people?
I think it's a tough time for young people in a lot of different ways. I do think that they want to be involved. I do think that they want to participate. And when school administrators say, you know, you need to stick with the reading, writing, and arithmetic, you know, you don't need to be talking about foreign policy, or you don't need to be talking about maybe a mayoral race in our community, I think they turn off. I think they, you know, start looking down at their cell phones and start texting, and they say the world isn't about me.
Yeah. Let's go back to the 60s, Mary Beth, and talk about what was going on at the time. You were 13 years old when all this thing began to unfold. Give us the thumbnail version of you, Mary Beth Tinker, at age 13.
Well, I was raised, as I tell kids, at a time that's a lot like today. There was a lot of things going on, and it was a turning point in history, really. We had issues of inequality, just like now, issues of people speaking up and wanting to have a voice. The war, of course, was growing, and our lives were determined by war, like it is so much today. And so in the 50s, my father was a Methodist minister. We grew up in Des Moines, Iowa. Well, first in a small town in Iowa. And so my parents showed us by their example what it means to put religious views into action. There was a swimming pool down the street in Atlantic where they wouldn't allow black kids to swim. It was 1957. I was 5 years old. So some of the kids, see, here's the power of young people again. They went up to the city hall and asked my dad to go with them. And he did. And of course, they thought when they got there, they would just tell them the situation and it would be all fixed. But no. The kids got in a lot of trouble. My dad was criticized. And actually, we had to leave that town. He lost his church. He lost his assignment over that. And so, we went to Des Moines, Iowa after that. And I grew up there. And again, you know, the civil rights movement was really building up. Of course, you had, Rosa Parks did her thing in 1955 in Montgomery. But then 61 was the Freedom Riders who traveled into the South. Again, young people who risked their lives to speak up for democracy. And so, and then by 64, I was 12 years old, and there was something called Freedom Summer. Well, that was right after the big Martin Luther King, you know, the March on Washington, 63, where, again, thousands of kids got arrested in Birmingham, Alabama, and stood up for what they believed in. And I was watching all of this on TV and on the news, and I was starting to think this is a pretty good way to live, to speak up for what you believe in. So by 1965, the Vietnam War was really building up, and there had been about 1,000 soldiers killed that year. Well, Johnson had a choice to either escalate the war or call a truce, or to support a truce that had been called for by Robert Kennedy, the senator. And it was Christmas time. So us kids, my little sister Hope and I, we would come home from school, and our job was to cook dinner because we had a big family, six kids. So we had to cook dinner. I was 13. She was 10. So when we watched, what would we do? Of course, we'd put on the TV. And then we would see these scenes of the war, the bombings, the huts on fire. It seemed to us that the whole world was on fire. And there were these body bags on the ground that they would talk about with the soldiers, and every night a body count. And it just affected us so much emotionally. And so us kids, by that time my dad was working with the Quakers. He was still a Methodist minister, but he worked with the Quakers. So, of course, they're all about peace. And so we decided to do something, you know, to express ourselves, I guess like we had seen all these other kids in the South doing. And so we just wanted to wear little black armbands to school to mourn the dead and to support the Christmas truce of Robert Kennedy. And that was our whole purpose. And there was just a handful of kids, some at the high school. And
I was about to ask how many kids were involved. Just a few, you said.
Just a few kids. There were maybe 10 total that planned it and organized it, and about 5 or 6 got suspended.
And you were one of them?
Yes.
Okay. What happened then?
Well, a few days before we were going to have our little action of wearing our armbands, one of the boys at the high school, at Roosevelt High School, wrote an article about it in his school newspaper. And I'm so happy to be here today with this big journalism program of high school journalists at Webster College, because high school journalism can be so important, and it certainly was in our case. Because when they wrote the article, the principals learned about it, for one thing. Not that we were trying to hide it, but they learned, and so they had a quick meeting and made a ruling against the armbands. Well, then, of course, there was a big dilemma. Then I didn't know what to do because I was such a sort of a good girl. You know, I got good grades. And, I mean, my big excitement on the weekend was going, you know, roller skating with my friend Connie. You know, so I wasn't one to go out and break the rules or anything. But I felt that us kids should have rights, too. And we should have our First Amendment rights. I had learned about this in history class. And I thought that we should have rights, too. So I decided, and my brother John and the small group of us, we decided that, you know, we were going to go ahead and do it anyway. Well, my dad didn't really want us to, especially. My mom understood. But we told my dad, look, you showed us by your example that you should stand up for what you believe in. And then he said he understood because he believed it was our conscience. So,
well, as a 13-year-old, you didn't make the decision yourself to take this issue to court. Who did?
After I went to school and got suspended and came home, I don't know how it happened, but the news started learning about it, and so they started gathering around, coming to a house, and there was a woman in St. Louis named Louise Noun, and she was a member of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, which, of course, their mission since 1920 has been to stand up for the Bill of Rights. And because of that, they go to the Supreme Court more than any organization in the United States. Well, she was a member of the ACLU, and she convinced the local group there in Iowa, it was in Des Moines, Iowa, that they should come and help these kids who were just expressing themselves, and she believed that we should have free speech rights also. So she offered, they offered us a lawyer, and William Counselor also offered to come and help us, but my parents decided to go with the ACLU, and so they started to represent. Of course, we tried to work it out with the school board so that we didn't have to go to court. And I always tell kids, if you have a disagreement with your teacher, with your administration, try to work it out. Try to negotiate. Don't just go to court because, of course, we want to avoid court cases. It's expensive and everything, you know. If we want to try to have peace not only in our world but in our schools. So we did try, but in the end, we had to go to court.
Right. We have to take a break now. That's Mary Beth Tinker. She is joining us in studio today to talk about the famous Tinker case, which was decided by the Supreme Court a little more than 40 years ago. She was expelled, as you've just heard, from school in Des Moines for wearing an armband in protest against the Vietnam War. And the Supreme Court finally ruled in favor of the freedom of expression for Mary Beth and her friends. She's with me in studio, as I've indicated, also Don Cargan of Webster University. He's the editor and co-publisher of numerous weekly newspapers here in town. We'll be back and continue our conversation in just a moment. I'd like to bring you into this discussion, too. Should student First Amendment rights be abridged? Do you think they should under any kinds of circumstances? Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. You can also reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Mary Beth Tinker. Her right to conduct an anti-war protest in the 60s was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in the famous Tinker case, that is, as it is described. And Don Cargan, also with us, editor and co-publisher of the Webster Kirkwood and South County Times, as well as the West End Word. He teaches journalism at Webster University. Mary Beth, take us through that Supreme Court decision. This was a couple of years later, I think in 69, was it not? You were there.
Yes.
Tell us about that experience.
Well, I had just moved to St. Louis, where my father had a new job. So it was November of my junior year in high school. So imagine you're in high school, 11th grade. You move to a brand new city where you don't know a soul. And I was always a very shy person anyway. So, I mean, I was eating my lunch in the bathroom. I didn't know if I would have friends. I was so shy and thinking about all of these issues. Would I have friends in algebra class? So then I hear, well, we're going to the Supreme Court next month. So I barely remember even going, I think because I was so, you know, much thinking about these other issues in my life. And I did go, though, and very soon after that, on February 24th, the Supreme Court ruled by 7-2 that students do have First Amendment rights in the public schools. And I just saw a letter that my father received from my mother that day. He was out of town, and she wrote to me, she said, "Honey, we won the case, and we celebrated with ice cream and soda pop tonight." It was really great. I mean, we were just these, you know, this average family, you know, that was going along, and it was really great.
Do you think, as an 11th grade student, that you had a full appreciation for what was going on and what really had been decided?
Absolutely not. I had no idea that this case was going to be so significant. I had no idea that my small action was going to make such a difference. And that's what my message to students, your small actions are going to make history. You're going to make history one way or another. If you do nothing, history will be made. But your small actions usually are what makes history. I think when I really realized the full importance of the case, for one thing, when I was in nursing school, and the case was in my nursing school textbook. I was going to nursing school here at St. Louis U, where I graduated. And I was so surprised to see the case in there. It was under children's rights and, you know, working with children.
And now, Don Corrigan, you're teaching the Tinker case.
I've been teaching Tinker for about 30 years. I've been teaching media law, first at Lewis University and then at Webster University School of Communications. It's really inspiring to listen to Mary Beth Tinker. You know, for all these years I've taught about the Tinker case, sometimes you lose the human story when you're talking about, well, it happened this way at the district level, and then it went to the appellate, and then the Supreme Court divided this way. But to actually, and that's what I try to tell my students in media law, is that, you know, this is not a situation where you're going to learn a bunch of Latin terms and a bunch of technicalities. There's people behind every one of these stories. And you need to think about the people behind these stories. The Hazelwood case came along and it kind of overturned Tinker.
That's where I want to go, connecting the dots between the two. They're two quite different cases. One involves journalism and the other involved the right to protest, really. Connect those dots for me.
Well, they're not so dissimilar in the fact that they're both about free expression. And the Tinker case could have stood as the benchmark for student free expression, and it was used in the Hazelwood case. In the Hazelwood case, it was a student newspaper that published a couple of articles that made the principal and the superintendent uneasy about divorce and about alcoholism, you know, subjects that were deemed too mature for the students. I think what a lot of people fail to realize is that students are not going to go wild. There have been so many student free expression movements around to try to counteract Hazelwood in state legislatures, including Missouri's. And what you hear from the legislators, well, if we don't have Hazelwood, the students are going to go wild. You know, it's like putting a machine – one of them actually said it's like putting a machine gun in their hands. Of course, these days the legislators seem to – like they want to put guns in students' hands, especially at the college level. But the fact is, we already have laws. Students still need to abide by our libel laws, our privacy laws, our obscenity laws. Those things aren't going away. But students need to have the freedom to write and to express themselves on significant issues. And Hazelwood took that away from them in a lot of cases.
What I have seen indicates that the distinction between the two cases, one involves student activities in school and the other one at school, I think is the way that's put. That's the distinction between the two.
Well, I think the way the court couched their decision is to say that, well, the student newspaper is not just an open forum. It's a pedagogical thing. It's like a learning laboratory. And therefore, we have the right to control our laboratory. I think they're really dealing with semantics in that. And I think, Justice Brennan pretty much called them on that when he said, well, you're just using this as an excuse to let administrators stifle anything that they're uncomfortable with.
Mary Beth, what do you see as the distinction between the two, and how did the Hazelwood case diminish the Tinker ruling?
Since the ruling in the Tinker case, there have been several Supreme Court cases that reduced the rights of students. The Hazelwood one was the first one in 1988, and that I just was so lucky to be at a symposium in Kansas City in November with Kathy Kuhlmeier of the Hazelwood case, and it was run by a professor there, Don Waddell, and she was on a panel with the principal. It was the first time that they had been together after all of these years. It was really interesting because apparently the paper had published something on these same controversial issues a few years earlier, and Kathy and Leslie Smart and Leanne Tippett, who lives here in Missouri, they were just wanting to update the article, and they felt that it was really important to the students in the school, and so they, you know, wanted to write this article, and they had a new advisor, and so, you know, who wasn't so familiar with it, so which is why the principal, Gene Reynolds, really got involved with it in the first place. But he said that it was an issue of budget cuts, that they had to reduce a couple of pages of the paper. But how is it? I mean, I have my Cure Hazelwood bracelet from the Student Press Law Center, which is a wonderful organization for anyone that has questions about these issues. You can check. Because I think it was a wrong decision, and my belief is that when students have a voice, things go better. And also that professional journalists agree that student journalists should have a voice without prior review and without censorship. I'm very involved with the Journalism Education Association, and there's a consensus that that is not the best way to run student journalism.
We have an email here from Tom in St. Louis who writes, in the early 70s, I was a college newspaper advisor, and even at that level, I had to haul out the Tinker case and show it to the administration more than once. Thank you, Mary Beth. I never knew the St. Louis connection.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, even colleges are affected by Hazelwood. There's a similar case called Hostie. But colleges are definitely held sometimes to the Hazelwood limitation also. Although there are, luckily, there are some, about seven states, I think, whose legislatures have passed laws saying, no, we're going to go by the Tinker standard for our students. And we did try in Missouri to get that passed. Joan Bray, I believe, was very involved in that, and I went up and testified, and we have tried to get that in Missouri without success. But there's always the future.
Joan Bray from University City, I believe, by the way, right?
Yes,
so
yes,
there is
that
connection,
yes,
as well.
Yes.
Let's go to the phone. Sheila called in early, and I want to get her into the discussion, as well as others at 382-8255. Give us a call. Sheila, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thanks a lot. I wanted to talk about sort of two sides of the coin of social networking and how that is related to schools. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there are a few schools that are feeling that it's in their purview to punish kids for certain things they say on social networking, things that may be critical of schools and so on. But the other side of that coin is, what about cyberbullying? Does the school have any right to interfere with that?
Yes, you're so right to talk about that. And, of course, social media is where it's at right now with student speech and expression. There have been some cases actually in Missouri that have been important in that. There was one recently from Hannibal where a student, and they cited Tinker in the ruling, the student made threatening comments on their own instant messaging on their home computer, and the courts have ruled against that student. But there are also students at Kirkwood in their recent issue of The Call, their student newspaper, talked about cyberbullying regulations at Kirkwood High School that gives the school a right to, for example, search cell phone messages, text messages, et cetera, if the student is involved in some kind of bullying investigation, et cetera. So, I mean, that's always the balance between hate speech and free speech. And it's something that people are working through all over the country.
Let me just read something from my notes here regarding the social media component, referring to the kids followed into their home, actually, in order to make the case. With today's social media, Hazelwood's restrictions on student speech are following students back to their homes. Some courts have ruled that principals can punish students who write ribald comments or parodies on the home computer if the comments disrupt the school. Well, there we are with the disruption argument again.
Yeah, and it's interesting that this out-of-school speech issue is very up, you know, current, but it also goes back to the 1700s when a boy named Peter Lander yelled at his teacher outside of school. and was later the next day whipped with rawhide for doing that. So these out-of-speech school issues actually go way back, but they certainly are in the at the front line right now of what's going on with student speech.
Don, you've indicated that students out at Webster today reacted well, what's the way I want to put this? We're certainly reacting to Mary Beth. I mean, they found her message very appealing.
Yeah, I was doing a session this morning, and Mary Beth walked into the classroom because we're heading the radio station, and it was, you know, at that point they all swarmed around her and they all had their armbands on and they wanted their photos taken with her, and I was sitting there thinking, now when they go back to their schools today with these armbands on, I wonder how their principals and administrators are going to react to this. And Mitch Eden, who's the advisor who put this, you know, had a lot to do with this conference at Webster University. I told him, Mitch, what are you in for when these kids get back on their bus and they go to some of these schools and the administrators say, hey, you can't be wearing that armband today. You know, we'll be right back into a Tinker case again, you know.
Let me remind our audience that you're listening to St. Louis on the Air. Mary Beth Tinker, by the way, will talk about her case, and Don just alluded to it, at an evening forum at the Winfred Moore Auditorium at Webster University at 7:30 this evening. A panel discussion will follow. It is free and open to the public. Mary Beth, you had indicated before we went on the air that you're gearing up for something you're calling the Tinker Tour that will be taking place later this year. What's that all about?
Yes, I'm very excited. I've decided that it's a moment in history when students really are speaking up, and they should be encouraged in doing that, and they should also hear stories of other young people through history, not only ours, but I have so many others that I love to tell them about, kids who have spoken up and made a difference, and students who are doing that right now today. And so we're going to be kicking it off on September 17th, Constitution Day, in Philadelphia at the National Constitution Center, and we'll be traveling around the United States, speaking at schools, libraries, even some juvenile detention facilities, talking to students about the First Amendment, the Constitution, and their rights. And I'm so lucky to have to be partnering with a wonderful attorney, Mike Hiestand, who just won a great journalism award, I believe from the Society of Professional Journalists. And he worked for the Student Press Law Center for over 20 years. And he'll be speaking to students about their student press rights. And I'll be speaking to them about the First Amendment. And I also will be hearing the things they're doing in their own communities to speak up and stand up about the things they care about. I just learned about some kids in Hopkins, Missouri, population 600, and they decided they needed a teen center. So they started writing articles in the local papers and speaking up about what they cared about. And they got their teen center, and they got a big donation. And so I want to hear more stories like that so that I can talk about them and share them with students all over the country and encourage them to use their rights to make a difference.
Don, it sounds to me almost like a groundswell amongst young people today. Is this true?
You know, I don't know if it's a groundswell. I think that students are thinking among themselves about where do we fit in, what happened in the past. I know in my media law class, I divided them up and asked them, what if this happened again? What if Senator McCain's joke, bomb, 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 Iran, actually happened tomorrow? How do you feel about if students in high school show up with armbands and you know, they have the American flag upside down in distress and they say we're against this? And it was interesting to me, and I think this is part of the, you know, what's left over from 9/11. A lot of the students said, no way, no way. You can't have those. So we had a debate about it. We had students who used some of these law cases to say the administrators have a right to stop this because we need to get behind our country if we decide to do this. And then we had students on the other side who said, no, we need to go back to the Tinker standard. We need to be able to express ourselves on something like this.
Tell me something. This is a slight digression, but I'm curious for a lot of reasons. About the young people today, and what do you sense they foresee as journalism of the future? I mean, is it going to be newspapers? Is it going to be all through social media, going to be through the internet? What are they thinking will be their lot in life as future journalists?
I find a lot of the most serious journalists and students – and this goes for what happens, you know, one of the premier high schools, this is Kirkwood High School for this. You talk to all those students, they like print. They want to be in print. That doesn't mean they're not using social media, but the most serious journalism students still like that tangible feel. I think it's going to be up to those kind of students to talk to their peers and say, you need to be informed. You need to think about this. I know that one of the panelists tonight is from Kirkwood High School, and she wrote an editorial talking about the Tinker case and how students need to be reading newspapers as well as websites, as well as looking at their social media and become better informed. I know at the Journalism Professors Convention in Chicago last year, there was a professor from University of Texas, Austin, who said she fears that the millennials, you know, the conception is that they're all getting their news from social media and from websites, and her study of millennials say, no, they're not. They're just using social media to talk to each other, and we've got to bring them back to news.
You know, I spoke to a group at Washington University not too long ago and asked that kind of question, how are you getting your information? And I was beginning to sense that, you know, maybe they're not reading newspapers anymore and that they're maybe in some sort of limbo and just devoted to the social media thing. And they all said, well, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is hit my cell phone and I've got the Washington Post or the New York Times right in front of me. Sure. So they're certainly getting – they have access to information and they're utilizing it. Are you finding this as well, Mary Beth?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think students and young people – because we have to remember there's so many young people that are not students. We have huge dropout rates. We have a huge discrepancy between race and income in our country. That's another – big issue that a lot of students are up to date. They know what's going on. They're writing articles like the conference I'm going to be at today. There are students from O'Fallon that are writing about the budget cuts. They're writing about violent video games. Students from Kirkwood are writing about, you know, issues in their school. Should they have iPads or laptops? They think they should have some say about it. I can show you center page spreads on immigration, on gun issues, and so many other things. But I think the discrepancy is the problem because so many schools don't have any newspaper. They don't have any journalism program. And that's a problem in the St. Louis area, too. And it's all over the country.
Yep, that certainly is. We have to take another break. You just heard from Mary Beth Tinker of the famous Tinker case, a ruling by the Supreme Court back in 1969 in which she won her right to conduct an anti-war protest in the 60s, and that was in Des Moines, but she subsequently moved down here to the St. Louis area in University City. Also with me in studio is Don Corrigan, who is a professor of journalism at Webster University, and he is well known in the journalistic community here as editor and co-publisher of the Webster Kirkwood Times, the South County Times, and also the West End Word. We'll be back to continue our conversation in a moment, and again, we'd like to bring you into this discussion. We're talking about the rights of students primarily when it comes to First Amendment rights, freedom of expression, and their newspaper or perhaps protests at school. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back to our conversation about the First Amendment rights of students, student journalists, and student protesters, if you will. With me in studio is Mary Beth Tinker. Her right to conduct an anti-war protest in the 60s in Des Moines was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in what has since become known as the very famous Tinker case. Also with me in studio is Don Corrigan, a journalist and a teacher of journalism at Webster University. Let's go right back to the phones and bring in Dennis calling from Overland. Dennis, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yes. I was telling your screener that Don taught my daughter Kate out there at Webster years ago, and I remember when she was in high school, she pushed for the idea of a fellowship of religious athletes as opposed to Christian athletes, and found out rather quickly it was it wasn't going to happen. And but she continued to fight for things like that, when she was with Don out there, it was fertile ground. I told him also that I picked up a New Yorker while I was on vacation and read a bunch of different articles. That's where print is so valuable. You get exposed to a bunch of different things, and some that you won't agree with. Whereas when you're on the computer, you tend to go towards the things that you agree with. It seems to lead you towards that. But and the last thing is R.J. Mattson, who we lost at the Post, told me about a theory of Every four generations, there is a people that will fight for things, and evidently this one is that fourth generation. So I think we got some hope. So thank you.
All right, Dennis. Thanks very much for the call. Interesting comment he made with regard to people going where their comfort level is high. I mean, we see it on cable television with the conservative channels and the liberal channels. People don't really venture very often to test the views of the other side. They stay where they're most comfortable.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so important to reach out across the gap, and that's what I do with students and encourage them to, if you disagree with a point of view or not, the important thing is, should we be able to talk about it in our country? And I'm so glad you mentioned the Fellowship of Religious Advocates and these issues, because it's across the political spectrum. We have a First Amendment that supports everyone's rights to speak up. And there has been a case saying that religious clubs should be allowed in schools. I think it's Bridget Mergen's case. But there were some students in New Jersey, for example, that were wearing red armbands to protest abortion. And they were suspended. But again, the ACLU came in and said, no, these kids have a right to express their opinions. And they won.
These hot-button issues, Don, are getting a lot of attention, and I'm sure that's, as you indicated earlier, making school administrators nervous when we talk about abortion and gay rights and things like that, that are very much a part of the public dialogue, but not for students, apparently.
Well, we still are a democratic experiment in America, and the emphasis is on experiment, and the experiments can fail. And it's really sad when people just sort of get into their tunnel vision or this tunnel vision and they don't talk to each other. That's the beauty of America, is this kind of discussion and talking about issues. And we need to train our students on how to talk to each other civilly. That's part of what education's about.
I suppose it could be argued that if you muzzle students when they're in their formative years, they'll stay muzzled.
Well, exactly. School should be a practice for being citizens. And so that's why we need them to be able to express themselves and to practice their democratic rights.
Let's go back to the phones. Ed is calling from St. Louis. Ed, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
I admire these people because I think we ought to listen to the youth. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, this First Amendment right stuff allows what goes through the airwaves today and the misinformation that goes out there and the money that's spent on misinformation, mm-hmm. that, wait a minute, really, and that's why the newspapers, people don't read them, informed people don't, listen to, anyway, television, and they're going to shut it down. They're going to shut it down. So there's, it is, that is a tricky question, but I'll tell you, I don't watch television. I don't read newspapers anymore, and I'm 62 years old.
Well, how are you informed?
I listen to your show, okay, and then
there
then,
you go.
And then
can't do better than
that. Then I go on the internet and I see what the internet. And it really, I'm going to tell you the key point. You asked that question. I listen to the BBC, and I hear things on this station. And I hear things at night that I never hear on NPR during the day. And I'm saying, wow, there must be something out there they don't want me to know.
I'm with them on that BBC, and I listen to you guys every night because, you get a lot more information than you get in this country on things. And the irony of that is that they're a government-controlled or government-funded outfit.
But it just makes the point once again that there are any number of sources of information out there. You have to look for it and have to work at it a little bit to find it. But it certainly pays off to listen to opposing points of views and long distance and foreign points of views as well. You're nodding there. Did you want to say something about
yes,
that?
Yes, absolutely. That's why we don't want to shut down, people's speech. But the answer is famous Supreme Court Justice, I think Felix Frankfurter said, the answer to speech that we disagree with is more speech. And then it's up to students. And I tell them, you have to figure out, investigate, find out what is the truth. What do you believe? What do you want to stand up for?
The irony of these Supreme Court decisions is that we've just had the Citizens case. And in the Citizens case—
Citizens United.
Yeah, the Citizens United case, mm-hmm. they ruled that corporations are essentially people with the same First Amendment rights. And they can spend as much money as they want for their First Amendment rights. But when it comes to a high school student, a 17 or 18-year-old who could be going to war and making life and death decisions, they're not equal to a corporation. They don't have the same rights.
It causes an imbalance, no question about it. It brings me to something else, and then I'm going to take another phone call. An organization, Don, that you and I are both involved in, and that is media literacy. With regard to the earlier call, the gentleman said that he doesn't read the newspaper anymore. He doesn't believe what he reads. Well, you've got to, as I say, work at it. And you've got to learn the critical thinking skills that will enable you to differentiate between the BS and the rest of it, right?
Yeah, you can't just shut it down and take a leave from life. Kids and adults, too, need to keep trying to find out and learn and listen.
If you take a pass, the bad guys will run all over you. Let's take another call. Susan joins us from Illinois. Go ahead, Susan. Thanks for waiting.
Well, hey, it's good to hear this discussion. And I'd also like to say I appreciate the BBC. But I can say that I sometimes get clarification of a BBC story about the United States when I hear National Public Radio reporting.
That'll
go. So you gotta listen around. And I should read more, actually. But anyway, I'm calling about another juvenile issue. I don't know how much of this is still going on, but in cities, certain juveniles are targeted as problems, and so preventive detention is practiced. They haven't committed a crime, but they're considered problems, and so they may actually be detained or imprisoned.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And this, I think that's just a blatant civil rights issue.
Yes, well, there are huge issues going on right now with youth and juvenile justice issues. And, again, the disparity in this area is enormous. The low-income students, the students of color, are the ones that have been targeted. And you've seen these reports recently, maybe from the Department of Justice or the Department of Education. I was just in Seattle where they're saying that kids of color are being suspended and arrested at something like three times the rate of white kids. So we have more young people that have been suspended. And then the problem is that can lead to involvement with the juvenile justice system. So it's a huge issue that I'm very concerned about, and I'm really glad that you raised that issue because these issues are issues of children's rights and youth rights.
There is another issue I'd like to raise, and that is expulsion from the school system. If a kid is actually put out of the system, that is such a dramatic thing to do to the life of a child.
Yes, it is.
A young adult.
I know. It's
terrible. you're just, you know.
It's
a tragic event.
I know. I'm so glad you called to raise this because as a nurse, I just want to see students succeed in school. As nurses and I have a degree in public health also. And as it turns out, the healthiest thing a teenager can do is graduate from high school. So we want kids to succeed in school and to make it through school. And that's another reason why I advocate for students having a say, because when they have a say in their schools, they want to be in school.
Well, there's
very
also
good.
Thanks for the call, Susan.
Thanks.
There is also constitutional protection against being falsely detained, is there not? I mean, that could be another kind of case for another kind of tinker.
And we've seen corruption in that area. There have been cases where the judge, you know, especially as we privatize prisons, and then you have these prison companies giving kickbacks to judges who keep saying, well, you're not reformed yet. You need to spend another 3 or 6 months here. The way we're treating our kids is a wider issue, but this First Amendment stuff is part of it.
Go ahead,
yes,
Mary
there Beth. I've seen a 6-year-old boy recently who was handcuffed for acting out, having a temper tantrum. I think that was last year. I'm trying to remember what state that was in. There was a little boy who chewed a toy gun out of a Pop-Tart a week or two ago. Maybe some of you have seen that, and he was disciplined in school for that. So there are a lot of issues in this area, and that's why I want to tell kids to know your rights and speak up for them, because you have a lot of adult allies who want you to have your expression, want you to have your rights.
Let me just tell our audience that you're listening to St. Louis on the Air. My guest in studio, Mary Beth Tinker, from whom you just heard, her right to conduct an anti-war protest in Des Moines almost a little over 40 years ago was upheld by the Supreme Court in the famous Tinker case of 1969. She's in studio with us, and Don Corrigan, editor and co-publisher of the Webster, Kirkwood, and South County Times, with us. He's also the same capacity for the West End Word, and he teaches journalism at Webster University. Mary Beth, let's go back to the days of your protest. It's my understanding that when all of this was going on, there were significant threats made against you and others. What was going on there?
Yes, well, some people misunderstand when you speak up and say something that's unpopular, which the Bill of Rights is really for, the unpopular minority opinion, I think. It's especially good for that. But, you know, people misunderstand and think that you're being unpatriotic. Well, we felt that we were being patriotic towards the Constitution. And I was raised in the church. My father was a minister. We believed in peace. And so we were just expressing, you know, the beliefs that we were raised with. But, you know, we had people throw red paint at our house, and we got postcards, you know, with hammer and sickle on it, and things like that, and called communists. Well, my mother always said, we weren't communists. We were Methodists. So, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding there. Someone called on the phone and threatened that a woman called when I was about to head out to school after our, you know, wearing our armbands. And she said, is this Mary Beth Tinker? And I said, yes. And she said, I'm going to kill you. And I hung up the phone. I couldn't believe it because as far as I was concerned, I was just a child who was doing what I had been taught in our society, which is to believe in peace and to advocate for peace, and it was Christmas time especially, which is all about peace. And so, you know, I started to see that these things can be very controversial. But as I found out later, that's what makes life interesting, controversy. So.
And it was a famous tactic back at that time, was it not, Don Corrigan, to accuse someone of being a communist? I mean, it was 10 years past the McCarthy era, but it was the height still of the Cold War, and that was a pretty popular way to attack someone.
It was. I think, you know, as times change, the words just change. You know, now it's Islamic terrorist or Islamic sympathizer. And that's one of the sad things. But I think going back to the history of like the Tinker case, it kind of fortifies you and it kind of makes you see that we need to have free speech in this country and we need to talk with each other, not at each other.
Are the young people that you're teaching today, are they surprised at the Tinker case or the conditions that created it?
You know, it's ancient history for them.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking.
You know, and so I find that the way to get them involved is to really fight out these cases. And we sort of have moot court in my classroom. And we talk on, you know, these people are with the Tinker case. These people are arguing more the Hazelwood case. I find that's the way to get them involved in thinking about this, not lecturing at them and saying this is what happened at the district level and here's what how these justices divided.
But Mary Beth, it is ancient history, and yet you're indicating the kids are spot on with it right now.
Well, because any time that there's a First Amendment issue in the schools, the Tinker case is cited. And one of the law professors we were just looking up recently and it's been cited something like 5,600 times or something like that since the ruling. So, I mean, it's in there. It's in the news. I mean, I could show you a number of situations in the last few months where it's been cited. A high school student in, I believe, Kansas criticized the governor on her Twitter account. And so it comes up all the time.
No shortage of examples. We have to end it there. Mary Beth, thank you. Thank you so much
thank
for being with
so
us.
Thank you so much.
Don Corrigan, great to see you again. I'll remind everyone that Mary Beth Tinker will talk about her case at an evening forum at the Winfred Moore Auditorium at Webster University. That's happening at 7:30 this evening. A panel discussion is going to follow. All you have to do is show up, right?
Thank you, Don. Right. And if someone wants to check out our Tinker Tour, you can go to Facebook. It's Tinker Tour, and you can sign up for your school to be a stop on the Tinker Tour.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Beth. We've got to say goodbye. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about work the organization U.S. Vets is doing to provide assistance to homeless and at-risk military veterans in the region. Gregory Peck's son will be with us tomorrow, by the way. And then we'll take a look at the South St. Louis Urban Debate League and its efforts with underserved youth. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.